Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Now, before last night's Rockets-Lakers game, I have to admit, I honestly did not have a very good feel for that series. Houston small-balled the hell out of the Lakers in Game 1. They got that early jump. Then they were getting hammered in Game 2. Yet they came all the way back from a 21-point deficit, despite the fact that Russell Westbrook looked like he had never even played basketball before, which was a huge part of the problem to me. Like, one of the biggest reasons that I can't get a read on the series, or couldn't get a read on the series going into last night, was you never know what you're going to get from Russ night to night. Great Russ or horrible Russ. Last night, it was much closer to the former than the latter. Like, if I were to tell you, Rocket fan, going into last night's game, that Russ would go 38-6, and that nobody lost an eye with him shooting it in a critical Game 3, you probably would have taken that, right? Hell yes, you would. Well, he did do all that, and it still didn't matter. They still lost 112-102. He played well, and they still got beat. And that loss was down to two people: LeBron Raymond James Sr., and Rajon Pierre Rondo, better known as King James and Playoff Rondo. And just for the record, I know that Rondo does not like the Playoff Rondo gloss. I get that, because it can undercut what he does in the regular season. That's fine. But to be fair, he really hasn't done jack in the regular season of late, other than get hurt and then not produce. But that really doesn't matter right now. Not when this dude can literally walk in off the streets and find another gear in the playoffs, because Rondo has, again. You know, for the Lakers, the question always is, who's going to be that number three option beyond LeBron and AD? And like Russ, you never know from night to night who or what you're going to get. Well, freaking Rondo was that guy last night. He was enormous off the bench for LA. Rondo was so good, you could get caught focusing only on him and get caught sleeping on LeBron. I mean, sure, LeBron was incredible again last night, but is it really unbelievable or incredible if the guy pretty much does it every single night? I mean, really, is it? Is it unbelievable if the guy does the unbelievable every single night? Hell yes, it is. And don't even think about sleeping on that old man, because pound for pound, he is still best in class. And just because he does it on the regular does not mean that it's not freaky. In fact, it's the fact that he does it with regularity that makes it so freaky. Check out these numbers for old man LeBron. 36, 7, 5, and 4 blocks. And again, he's doing it at age 35. It's freaking impossible. I mean, it's unheard of. This guy's on the floor with two other league MVPs, at least four Hall of Famers, and he is head and shoulders the best player on the court at 35. And he's doing it on both ends. This guy's hitting from deep. He's carving up Houston with passes, like this one to the Caruso.
So LeBron, looking at a double team with 5 seconds to shoot, throws a perfect pass to Caruso, who lays it up and in. Give the assist to LeBron. Give the basket to Caruso. Lakers trail by one.
Another amazing look. Amazing look from LeBron. And there's nothing the guy can't do. He's getting out on the break as only an old man can.
The hands of Davis. Now the Lakers on the run to LeBron. LeBron all the way. Freight train coming. LeBron James. Two-handed jam.
This dude, I mean, finishing like a monster, but getting it done. And not only getting it done, but just embarrassing fools on the other end of the floor.
Covington back to Gordon, now picked up by LeBron. Gordon looks like he wants to shoot it. He does. He goes right to the rim. LeBron blocks it. Great defensive play by LeBron. 7 minutes to go in the third quarter. Here's Harden flying down the middle. Blocked again by LeBron. His second block in the last minute. How about LeBron defensively, Michael, with two blocks on the last two Houston possessions?
Like Bill Russell out there protecting the basket.
Yeah, right? Get that weak crap out of here. And there was even more where that came from.
Covington to Rivers, Rivers to the rim, blocked by LeBron, and the quarter's over. And LeBron has his fourth block of the game. He's been all over the place on both ends of the court.
Fourth block of the quarter. LeBron and the Lakers won that game on defense, and especially with their fourth quarter defense. Man, they locked Houston the hell up. They're so much longer. They're so much more physical. That was a mug job. Small ball just got punched in the face. Again. Like, they're trapping the pick and roll. They're getting in passing lanes. They're locking them down. They held Houston to just 38 in the second half. And that's the scary thing for Houston fans, right? They hit 40% of their threes. That was not a terrible shooting night. And they took care of the ball. They did not turn the rock over. And Russ was good. And James Harden went 33-9-9. The Beard just missed a triple-double. Russ had a good game. And they still lost by double digits. And remember those dopes who were saying that LeBron was not a true Laker? That LeBron did not understand what being a Laker was all about? That LeBron came here for the wrong reasons? That LeBron was here for his production company? That LeBron just didn't get it? Remember all those dopes? Well, check this from LeBron about Kobe and the Laker tradition.
At the end of the day, we just hope we make him and his family proud. And that's all it's about. And anybody that's ever stepped foot and put on a Lakers jersey, we hope we make them proud as well. From Kobe all the way down to everybody that's ever played in Los Angeles or been a part of the Los Angeles Lakers organization, that's what we're trying to do. I mean, it's a tradition here, and it's our responsibility, win, lose, or draw, to hold that with the utmost responsibility and utmost respect. And, that's what Dr. Buss will want as well.
So he gets it. He gets it. That's not like idle chatter. He understands. And speaking of takes that are starting to look pretty horrible right about now, remember all those Laker fans who wanted Frank Vogel to bench Rondo for Dion Waiters? Now, where are all you geniuses? Because I know where Rondo is, on the floor and looking like the Rondo of a decade ago. I mean, holy crap, playoff Rondo has officially arrived. He's in the building. There's nothing this guy can't do. All over again. 21 points, 9 assists, and setting up Anthony Davis for alley-oops.
D'Antoni citing personal reasons, and that's all he would give on Daniel House. He did say it was not COVID-related. Oh, Anthony Davis on a beautiful setup from Rondo.
He just steps up. P.J. Tucker starts to front. Rondo throws it up over the top.
Rondo, man. I mean, literally, how does this guy do this? He walked in off the street after being away for months, and just shows up and does that. And more than that, how about him hitting from three and then chasing it with a steal and a layup?
Here's LeBron, gives it up. Morris across court. Rondo just hit a three. And Rondo's got his third made three of the night.
Well, we've been saying the Lakers don't have a third guy. Rajon Rondo is saying, yeah, yes, we do. And it's me, and they double-team Harden and get a steal and another Rondo bucket.
That's a 10-0 Laker run. Harden was trying to go behind the back. Rondo was right there.
Like, the whole thing is so weird to me. Like, to see LeBron doing what he's doing at 35 is absolutely incredible. And then to know that Rondo, who seems like he's old enough to be LeBron's dad, is actually younger than LeBron, and then he's doing what he's doing. That might have been a 10-0 Laker run, but that was a personal 8-0 Rondo run. And that took the Lakers from 1 up to 8. So if Rondo is knocking in threes, you can go ahead and cancel Christmas.
You can cancel Christmas.
It does not. Yeah, you can. Like, it doesn't matter what else you're doing. When Rondo is hot from outside, it's going to be a long night for everybody. And then again, it's not just about the offense. This guy's rolling out there looking to defend James Harden and Russell Westbrook, too. And again, as a reminder, this is a guy who didn't play in the first round. And prior to that, he had not played, or he had played in zero games. And he had a single practice in the last 6 months. This guy's a freaking pro. This is a guy who shows up when it matters and can just throw the switch. You're not supposed to be able to do that, but Rondo can, and Rondo does. Anthony Davis is looking around him at these old dudes, and he can't believe what he sees.
His intensity picks up. He wants to guard, you know, the best perimeter guy. You see, he guards James and Russ sometimes, shooting the ball very well, making the right passes. So his IQ is on another level. You know, we got, you know, the two best IQ guys in the game, him and LeBron on the floor at the same time, you know, which is tough for defenses, and he's making the right plays. Playoff Rondo is real, and you know, he showed up tonight.
That's it. Playoff Rondo is real. And you do have a couple of guys that are not only floor generals, but have extremely high basketball IQs in the two old guys. Or as LeBron put it best, quote, some people are built for this and some people are not. Rondo is. Again, I don't know what's more insane, that Rondo is doing that at 34 or that Rondo is only 34. mean, it feels like this guy was in Boston like 40 years ago. And never mind KG. Didn't Rondo run with Bird and McHale? Wasn't Rondo part of that amazing two-headed backcourt along with Bob Cousy? How is this guy still playing at this level? How is this guy doing it with that intensity after not playing for so long? Because like LeBron, Rondo defies belief. Now, that's not to say that he can go out there every single night there and do what he did last night. And if you're a Rondo hater or a Laker hater, you better hope he doesn't. Because if this guy can consistently do what he did last night, look the hell out. Small ball may have worked in game one, but it hasn't since. Harden and Russ both got theirs, and they still got worked. So that's bad news for the Rockets and everybody else who is still running in the bubble. Clones. Man, I'm so glad that we could talk about this. Let me ask you something. What do we want when we're craving protein or we need more energy? Not bars, not sugary snacks, not energy drinks. What we want is beef, pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your father's jerky. It's not shriveled. It's not dry. It's not tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender. It's tasty. It's not rough. And why is it so good? Because Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. They take their smoked beef extremely seriously. You can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein. It comes in four amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest that goes with you wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach. So look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. Clones, if you don't see it, just ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? We are joined by Kenny Clark. Kenny, it's good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Good, good. So it's Wednesday of a game week, and we're talking about like the most unusual, bizarre offseason ever. How does it feel then to be just a couple of days away from kicking off this season?
Man, it feels great. You know, as we all know, we got to get used to this new normal with the virus and everything. So all that stuff has been a lot different, but excited that we get a chance to play this week and we finally get to start the season.
Kenny Clark, my guest, not only play this week, but any week one game is going to be important. But how much more juice is there when you're starting with the Vikings? How big is it to have that game right out of the gate?
It's huge, man. We all know, you know, you got to win your division games, and these division games mean a lot when you talk about, you know, the playoffs and all that kind of stuff. So with this game being so early in the year, you know, our division is a tough division with a lot of great teams in it, and this division usually goes on, you know, into the last couple of games, and we find out where everybody sees that. So this is going to be an important game for us.
No doubt. Kenny Clark, my guest. You know, speaking of that offseason, you got after it in a huge way when it came to conditioning. There was that video, for instance, of you pulling a bus. What were those workouts like, and what did you take away from them?
Yeah, man, it was a lot different, you know, most of the time, the first facility I was working out at, it had shut down. I had to go to another facility in Corona. I had to drive from L.A. to Corona every day. And, you know, that's when, you're pulling the buses and all that kind of stuff. So it was a lot of different workouts that I had to do. And then, you know, once the summer hit, we moved right back up to L.A. and I was able to train back in L.A. So, you know, the workouts and everything, you know, it was tougher to get in shape, you know, but, you know, as long as you know, you own it every day and you stay consistent with everything, you should be good.
We're talking to Kenny Clark. You know, I wonder how much of that, and it was tough to get the work in because everything was shut down, but those workouts, how much of that was about physical conditioning and staying in shape, and then how much of that was about creating a mindset that even though everything is shut down, we have to find a way to get better no matter what?
Yeah, for sure, man. I think more of it was just the mindset, just making sure you don't shut your brain off. And you know you don't take a break just with it being a pandemic. You don't know, you know, what could happen. So, you know, I think I really you know did a great job at just going in every day, making sure I'm getting work in. You know, I had a lot of great coaches I was working with during the off season that pushed me and made sure I got back. I mean, I'm getting in shape. So, you know, I was just excited about, you know, the season and everything.
Hey, Kenny, you and I spoke last season, but since then you've had a number of enormous moments, including your first Pro Bowl nod. What did that honor mean to you, and then what was that experience like?
It was cool, man, just being recognized, you know, as one of the best players. You know, it's something that I've been dreaming about and I've been really wanting to achieve. So to finally achieve that and get my first Pro Bowl, you know, that's great. You know, I'm looking forward to balling out, you know, each and every year and trying to get into as many Pro Bowls as possible. And the experience was great. You know, you got a chance to meet, you know, a lot of guys up there and get to pick each other's brains on, you know, games and stuff like that and how guys, you know, react off of sets and all that kind of stuff. So and it was actually fun too. So I had a really good time at the Pro Bowl.
Green Bay Packer Kenny Clark is my guest. Now, I mentioned the 12 sacks in the last two seasons. Last year, though, you had 49 pressures, 43 disruptions, which was the second highest number in the league. So how much pride is there in the fact that as a tackle, you're not just a run stuffer, but you're going to get to the passer and you're going to cause chaos once you get there?
Man, it's huge, man. I'm just trying to just be the best player that I can be. And, you know, all my life I've always been, you know, a run stopper at first and all that kind of stuff. But I'm just trying to tap into all my potential. You know what I'm saying? And I'm explosive. I'm an explosive athlete. You know, I'm big enough to stop the run. I play with great technique. And, you know, and I can use my ability, use my quickness, use my power to my advantage and, you know, get on guys pretty quick and flip my hips and all that kind of stuff and get after the passer. So, you know, each and every year, each and every practice, each and every game, I'm finding out different things about myself. I'm still a young player that's still learning and all that kind of stuff. So I'm learning everything. I'm learning, you know, through everything on the fly. And I'm just excited about my progression as a player each and every year and each and every game.
I love that answer. That's a great answer. And I'll tell you why. You and I have touched on this in the past. But the more time you spend in the NFL, the more sacks that you rack up. How much of getting to the quarterback is about what you just talked about? You know, that great athleticism, that raw power and speed. And then how much of that is about being perfect in all the small technical details?
I mean, I think the athletic part and having your power and all that kind of stuff, that's a bonus. But just what I had to learn just from my rookie year to now is just the game. This game is a huge mind game. You know, it's a huge. It's just mental. It's a lot of it is mental. And you know, watching film and you know, working on your technique at practice with the bags and throughout the off season, just with, you know, hand drills and all that kind of stuff, knowing your angles. Knowing your footwork and how all that stuff ties together, knowing, you know, which hand to hit and all that kind of stuff, it gets tough. You know, it's fast, and you got to be able to react fast. You got to be able to know what you want to do, and you got to be confident in what you want to do. So I think that's the big mental part about it, and the athletic and the power and all that kind of stuff, that's just a bonus to add on to that.
Kenny Clark is joining us. Now, a few weeks back, you signed an extension that made you the highest-paid nose tackle in NFL history. All right, that's pretty heady. The highest paid nose tackle in NFL history. What does the contract and that title mean to you?
Man, it's an unbelievable blessing. You know, I'm just thankful for it, and just, you know, really just, man, just got to live up to it every day. You know, it's something that I've been wanting, something that I've been feeling like for the past couple years, 3 years, 2 years. That you know, I'm one of the best defensive tackles in the league. I'm the best nose tackle in the league, and I gotta just keep proving that. Keep on working towards proving that every single week.
So the story goes that you would come home from Lambeau around 6 o'clock at night. You went to bed early, but then your mom and your agent started to blow up your telephone. What were they calling you about, and what were those conversations like?
So that they already had. I had told my agent that I wanted to get to a number, and they had got pretty close to it, and everything was happening so fast. And I had went to sleep. We were in camp. I had went to sleep. I was so tired from practice and all that. And they had called my mom, and everybody was just blowing my phone up, trying to make sure we got the deal done, you know. And I woke up at like probably like 12. And you know, back at home, it's like 10 o'clock. So I woke up at probably like 12, called everybody back, and you know, they yelling at me like, "Man, we got to get this thing done." And you know, just happy I got up and got it done.
I mean, Kenny, it's like it's interesting because you're talking about this, and I can hear how much it means. But maybe you can even elaborate on that for a minute. Like from the outside, it seems like signing that contract was a really emotional moment for you, for your mom, for the rest of the family. I mean, obviously the money is great and you earned it, but what's the extension represent to you personally and to your family, given what everybody put into it and sacrificed?
Yeah, man. I mean, just. If you know my story, if you know me, you just know how much it means to me. I think I really put in a lot of work. Like I was telling you earlier, you know, I've primarily been just a run stopper and all that in college and even my early years into the NFL. And I worked so hard to become a better pass rusher each and every year. You know, I worked so hard to become a better run stopper each and every year. My family, you know, everything that's been going on with my dad and all that kind of stuff. You know, we didn't been through so much, and for me to achieve that, and for me to achieve that, man, that was just a blessing. And you know, I'm just thankful. You know, thankful for the Packers, thankful for my family and everybody that pushed me to get to the point that I'm at today.
Kenny Clark joins me for a couple of more moments. Now, after you signed that deal, Aaron Rodgers had this to say, quote, "He's found his voice at times. His leadership role has increased over the years. It's been fun to watch him kind of step into that opportunity. He is one of those guys that you know you can count on every single week," end quote. If you know anything about Aaron Rodgers, that's not the kind of praise that he just throws around. What's it mean to you to have earned the level of respect from him where he says it point blank, "We know we can count on Kenny every single week"?
Man, I love it, man. And it's just throughout the years, just, you know, earning my teammates' trust, and, you know, and that's what it's all about, and that's how you become a leader. They watch me day in and day out, how I work and how I go about my business, you know, what I'm talking about, and they see the type of person I am and my character. And, you know, I'm the same guy every day that comes in, that's working hard, and just trying to just get to work and trying to get better each and every way possible. And, you know, they seen me throughout the years grow. I came in the league at 20 years old, and they seen me grow and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I think, you know, they just, you know, happy to see, you know, the player that I am today.
So finally, you come in as a 20-year-old. The extension means that you're going to be in Green Bay for a long time to come. Again, you're from California. You went to high school in Rialto. You went to college at UCLA. What's it been like to make a home and establish yourself in Green Bay?
Man, I love it, man. It's a lot different than Cali, of course. You know, it's not, you know, the big city and everything, but you know, this place out here, man, it fits my character and you know, my how I am. You know, I'm chill, I'm calm, you know, I'm just level headed, and I'm just real family oriented guy. So and this spot, you know, it fits all those things. So that's what I love about Green Bay, man. You know, the fans are great. You know, it's a spot that you can just chill with your family and just go to work, and that's what I'm all about.
It seems to me like you've been able, with focus and grind and work ethic, to impose your will on most things, except you are fighting one losing battle. And I know this because you had a tweet last month, quote, "Man, I don't care what nobody says. Rice is the hardest thing to cook. I swear." Break that down for me, man. Why is rice so hard to cook? And have you figured out a good method yet?
Man, it's just so tough, the timing of everything. Like, you put the water in, you put a little bit too much water in, like, the rice is going to get soggy. Like, I sometimes don't get it. And then depending on what kind of rice you're making, you know, it depends on, you know, it shows, like, how much water you got to put in there. So that's, like, the toughest part for me to learn. And, you know, I took a lot of people's advice, you know, from Twitter and all that kind of stuff. And, I guess the best way is just to get a rice cooker. And I bought one of those that week. So I've been all right with the rice now.
I was going to say, was that a game changer? Did that fix everything?
Yeah, for sure, 100%.
Now is the time to celebrate. Football is finally back, and DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports, has millions of reasons why you should be hyped. To kick off the football season, DraftKings is giving new users a free shot at $1 million, the top prize, with a total of $3 million up for grabs for this Thursday's football contest. Getting in on Thursday night's single game showdown is so easy. All you have to do is download DraftKings using the promo code Rome. Draft six players from the season opener. Stay under the salary cap. See how your team stacks up against the competition. So head to the app right now and start making it rain. Plus, new users who sign up today on DraftKings using the code Rome will get a free shot at the $1 million top prize with your first deposit. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching the game like having a shot at a $1 million payday. Download the DraftKings app right now. Use the code Rome. And for a limited time, new users can get a free shot at the $1 million top prize and $3 million in total prizes. Do not miss this extra special week one bonus. Enter the code Rome and get a free shot at the $1 million top prize with your first deposit. Code name Rome. Only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Let's get at it. Time for your beefs.
Is this the beef jerky segment?
Yes, Rex. Finally, it's back. Let me start with the social media aspect. Hey, Jim, my beef is with you. You hit my car while it was parked in our driveway. Signed, Janet. Janet would not have done that. She would not have sent me her beef. In fact, she texted me moments ago. She's getting her walk on. And she said to me, which podcast should I listen to? And I said, The Good Brothers. And her response was, that's the one I was going to listen to. So she's not beefing with me, and certainly not about that. Jim, my beef is with a lady who holds a conversation on a cell phone when we can hear six rows down in a grocery store, blocking the entire aisle, then gets mad when people say, excuse me, to get to the bread that she is blocking with her two baskets and four toddlers. Signed, Samuel C. Jim, I got beef with, quote, intolerant regional best pizza guy. These kooks are constantly going on about the food in their region being the only true way to prepare a pie. Flat, thin, stuffed, pan, square, or round. Good pizza comes in many shapes, sizes, and preparations. Signed, Headstrom Bacon in South Detroit. All right, let me veer off very quickly for a beef of my own about pizza. And this is going to hurt them a hell of a lot more than it hurts me. And I didn't want to have to do this because I thought that it was a one-off. Back in the day, when I lived in the 818, Janet and I would hit up California Pizza Kitchen. I mean, it just don't at me with this. Or go ahead and at me with this. I don't care. I'm just saying, back in the day, back in the 90s, way back in the day, man, place was fun. It was fun. It was consistent. It was what it was. You know, back then, you know, that the creative pizzas that they had, you know, like the Thai chicken pizza, the barbecue chicken pizza. I mean, I'm talking way back in the day, the 90s. Man, that was fun. And it was pretty good. I'm not going to sit here and say, damn, that's authentic. Damn, that's the best pizza ever. I'm saying it was good and it was fun. The other day in Orange County where we live, I went and had one. Damn, dude, what happened? That pizza quote that used to be good and fun now is not pizza at all. In fact, there's no cheese that I can see. And no toppings that I can see, just burnt out bread and burnt pizza sauce and not very much of that. I mean, like, it was horrible. And you know me, I'm not swerving out of my lane to crack on restaurants ever, but that's how bad that was. And I thought to myself, man, bad day, bad experience. That's a one-off. I mean, I know this place, but a part of me was like, I'll never go back there ever again. How many times have you had a really bad experience and said to yourself, I will never do that ever again? And then time heals that wound and you do. Well, we were having a really tough day over the weekend. Things were going on, family stuff, couldn't get out, pandemic, you know, blah, 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 blah. What the hell, man? What's mixing that CPK run? Dude, same exact deal. It's like they took a pizza box and spread a little bit of pizza sauce on it and said, here you go, chump. Here's your pizza. And they baked it. Here's the box. Let's put some sauce on it. No cheese, no topping. And let's cook the box. Here you go, Rome. How you like that? That's my beef. Yeah, dude, you don't come around here. You're not welcome. Don't worry. Don't worry, man. Never again. Hi, Jim. You want to know what my beef is? My beef is if the NHL playoffs began nearly a month ago and we have not heard your Stanley Cup predictions yet. Bella B in Calgary. Guilty. That's fair. Now, I did leave in the midst of this, right? And I took that month-long vacation, which I split up in two parts. Rome, my beef is with no glass bottles in the pool area. Let me tell you, I have an occasional shower beer, and that place is a lot more dangerous. Shampoo, conditioner, Dora's Deep Sea Adventure bath toys. Yeah, I got kids. And never once dropped a bottle in there. The 3 to 5 feet deep hotel pool is nothing compared to that minefield that I have in my house. Interesting. They don't want to be responsible. They don't want to be liable. I see them working. Yeah, I've never been about that shower beer life. I'm not saying that I'm against it like I am cardboard pizza, literally, allegedly. CPK, cardboard pizza kitchen, allegedly. I just have never really gone. I've never waded into those waters, the shower beer. I want to hear from Shower Beer Nation. Is it all that? Glass bottle or can? I'll tell you this, when I was in college, I did slap a radio in there. Yes, the shower radio changed my life, but never a shower beer. Does it release dopamine and creativity, or is it just refreshing after a workout? Rum Slice, I've got beef with my ceiling fan. It only has two speeds. One, low. Two, oh my God, it's spinning so fast, it's going to rip off that ceiling and kill somebody. Geoff and Lincoln, not bad. I can see that. Hey, Rome, I have a beef. It's with a guy in my Sunday morning foursome. Okay, let's just call him Dave. Dave the cheater. Count your damn strokes, Dave. You don't shoot in the low 80s. You shoot in the low 90s. Count your strokes like the rest of us do. Aaron in Iowa. Dear King Romy the First. Yeah, I got beef. I got beef with those overly nice and friendly employees over at the damn Chick-fil-A. I'm having a crappy day. I just want to shove your amazing chicken down my gullet and not tell you about my life. Josh from San Diego and Boise. That's my problem with the bank, yo. That's my problem with the bank. How you doing, fine? What are you doing this weekend? Nothing? How's your wife? Great. Hey, Rome. I got beef with the NBA calling this garbage the playoffs. The NBA season ended in March. What we're watching now is an exhibition tournament. Signed Jeremiah, fan of real basketball. 1-800-636-8686. Let's try some phone call beef. Jeff in SoCal. Jeff, what's your beef?
Rome, what up? Hey, if you're going CPK, you got to go chicken piccata. But Jim, I'm calling in my beef today. Amy Schumer has a cooking show. Look, I know we're starving for content on the TV, but Amy Schumer has a cooking show? Cooking. She can't even carry a comedy show, and she's a comedian. What the hell is she doing on TV cooking? The only prerequisite she has for being on a cooking show is that she obviously likes to eat food. I mean, Jim, I would call her a thumb. She kind of looks like a thumb, but that would be an insult to thumbs. Got to get her off the air. I can't have Amy Schumer cooking out.
Thank you, Jeff. What's your beef? His is that Amy Schumer has a cooking show. 1-800-636-8686. Jimmy, my beef is with the Jungle's Huntington Beach candidate for city council. Silk Bra has a lack of empathy for the homeless. Take 25-time winner of the Smack Off, Dick Flowers, for example. Dude is in dire need of a shower, charcuterie, and a couch to crash on. Yet Silk makes him sleep in his car. Needless to say, I'll be voting for Tito. Brent in PC. Rome, my beef is with the low-life Delta Bravos I deliver food to via Uber Eats that refuse to tip. I'm out here putting my health and well-being on the line, and you Scottie Pippen wannabes can't be bothered to even throw a measly $2 at me for a tip? If y'all can't be bothered to tip, then do me and the rest of the gig economy a favor. Get off your fat, lazy, cheap asses. Get in your cars. Go sit for 20 minutes in the McDonald's drive-thru and get your food your damn selves. Bobby in OKC. War Uber Eats implementing a minimum required tip. Unwar no tippin' Pippin and his apparent cult following. Rome. My beef is with the term occasional irregularity. If it's occasional, then it's not irregular. Howie, near the D. Well played, Howard. Well played. That's the best one yet. Let's go to Houston. Kyle on the phones. Kyle, what's your beef?
Rome, thanks for the vine. My beef is people who cannot return their shopping carts to the proper place. No, leaving it next to the cart corral is not putting it back. And rolling it to me is also not the same, you dip stains. Put it back the way it should be, or else you shouldn't get hired for a job. This is basic levels of humanity. War Deshaun Watson's new contract. Out.
All right, Kyle, thank you very much. How about when you go back to your car and put your grocery bags in the car, and then you push up the cart onto the curb, which is a square around a tree, and you just leave it right there? Is that returning the cart? Or is returning the cart when you block four different parking spaces with said cart? Or is returning the cart when you just kind of let it go, and then it starts drifting towards your car? Our car, I should say. What is your beef? We are joined by PJ Washington. PJ, it's good to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good, good. Listen, there are a number of things I want to talk to you about, including sport blocks, which is a really interesting proposition. But what has life been like for you since the season ended? What have you been up to, and what kind of things have you been working on?
Life's been pretty good. Just trying to stay in shape, just trying to stay ready for when the next season starts and whenever pretty much we get to play again. So I've been working on a lot of different stuff and just trying to stay active.
All right, so you were drafted last summer out of Kentucky. Let me get your thoughts on that. When you look back on your time at Kentucky and your time with Coach Calipari, what kind of memories do you have?
All good memories. I feel like Coach Calipari put me in a great position to be where I am today. Without him, I obviously wouldn't be here. So I appreciate him, and pretty much everything I've done in Kentucky has only made it easier for me to transition to the NBA.
I love Lexington. I love Cal. I love Las Vegas. I think that's a great place. PJ Washington is joining us. You know, Kenny Payne, who was an assistant with you when you were at Kentucky, is now with the Knicks. He talked about how back at Kentucky, everything ran through you in the final 6 minutes of the game. So what did it mean to you to know that on a team that was loaded with that much talent, they were always going to look to you when it mattered most?
I think it meant a lot, and it just goes to show that I was one of the leaders on the team, and I put so much work in and be in that position. With those guys on that team, I feel like we had a really talented group. And obviously, we had some great coaches. So I'm just happy to be a part of the – I was happy to be a part of the team and happy to be where I am today.
Now, there are stories about some legendary workouts that you went through with Coach Payne, including one that's a half hour of alternating between 45-second sprints on the treadmill and then a minute of defensive slides. Like, what do you remember about those sessions?
Yeah, I mean he put me through hell. Yeah, those were the good old days. I mean, we used to do those workouts pretty much all the time. Some days we would do it before practice, and then we would work out during practice and after practice. So it was just a lot of working out and a lot of training I had to go through. But, I mean, without that, I don't think I would have been here.
We're talking to PJ Washington. So when you're at Kentucky, obviously you're going to compete at the highest level in college, but then the NBA is a totally different level from that. And yet in your first game as a pro, you just drop right in, you score 27, then you get a double-double in game two, then you go 23-8 a few games after that. So I'm curious, what was the transition like from college to the NBA? Was it what you expected?
Yeah, I mean, I expected the NBA to be a lot faster and the pace to be a lot different. Obviously, we're playing against a lot better players, but I think the transition was easy for me just coming from a program like Kentucky where they pretty much mold you into a pro from day one. So with Coach Cal and Coach Kenny Payne, they pretty much did that a great job of that for me, and it made the transition a lot easier.
Talking to PJ Washington, you know, one of the things that keeps coming up from your coaches and your teammates is the fact that you seem to make the right play all the time. Marvin Williams, for one, said, quote, "I was like, geez, man, it's been like this dude has been doing this for a long time. It's kind of scary, honestly," end quote. He went on to say that sometimes he didn't remember that you were only a rookie. Like, for those who don't know, your parents both played at Middle Tennessee State. Your mom, Sherry, averaged 20-10. So how much of your game comes from your parents directly?
I think a lot of it. I mean, my physicality definitely comes from my father, and I feel like my skill set comes from my mom. They definitely helped me get to this point. They put a lot of time and effort into it, and I appreciate them for it.
Right, so then the pandemic comes, and the league shuts down, and then your season is over. Well, I mean, it was just so strange and so unusual for everybody. What was it like for you to have your season end the way it did?
I think it was crazy. I mean, after the last game, we were in Miami. We had just beat the Heat. And we're in the locker room, and they're talking about the season's about to end. We're just like, what? Like, we're ready to go home, go play our next opponent. But, I mean, that was definitely shocking for us. And we definitely didn't know where to go from there. So I think our biggest thing was just try to stay in shape and just try to be ready if the season does resume.
Talking to PJ Washington. Now, you played with Tyler Herro at Kentucky, and you've been hyping him for a while. What do you make of the way he has shown up in the postseason so far?
I mean, I expect that from him. I mean, he's a great worker. I mean, he works for it every day in a gym. He's one of the hardest workers I've ever seen. So everything he's doing on the court, I've definitely seen him do before in workouts and definitely on the court at Kentucky. So, I mean, Tyler's a great player and he has a great future. So, I mean, I expect nothing less from him.
Yeah, I mean, he's been lights out for sure. PJ Washington joining us. Now, back in July, you did a video with GQ where you broke down how you approached your finances as a rookie. You're working with a financial advisor. One of the first steps that you took was to put 20% of everything you earn into a spending account and 80% into a savings account. What was the thinking behind that?
Just wanted to save as much money as possible. You see a lot of guys nowadays where they'll be in the league making a lot of money, and then a couple years later they'll won't have any money. So I just didn't want to be one of those guys. I just wanted to try to find my way to basically create wealth through my contracts and basically live the way I'm living the rest of my life. So my biggest thing is just trying to save as much money as possible right now.
All right, so it's really smart and it's really disciplined, and a lot of people, especially young people, would not go about it that way, or maybe they would try it and not stick with it. Has it been tough for you to stick to that budget?
No, I mean, I'm a very cheap guy, so I don't really buy too many things anyway. Whenever I want something, I'll go buy it. But, I mean, if I don't think it's smart, I'm not going to buy it at all. So I just try to stick to those rules and just be safe with my spending.
All right, so, PJ, in terms of that, you did treat yourself to a couple of cars. What did you go with, and what was the thinking behind that?
Well, I wanted to get a car, and I wanted to get a truck. My first car, I bought it because when I came back to school for my sophomore year, a couple of my old teammates came to school, and they had the car, and I was just like, wow, like, this is pretty much everything I've ever wanted. So, I mean, once I got it to the NBA, that's the first car I got. So, and then I got a truck as well, just because I'm a big guy, and I can't really drive cars all the time because my knees tend to hurt. So, I got both.
Dude, what kind of car, though? What was the first car?
A Porsche Panamera.
Ooh, that's what I'm saying. Okay, good, man. You earned that. You should treat yourself to a nice ride. Now, what about fashion? When it comes to fashion, can you just kind of roll in wearing whatever you want? Or when you're on a team with guys like, say, Dwayne Bacon, do you have to step up your fashion game?
No, yeah, you definitely have to step up your fashion game. We have a lot of guys on our team who are in the fashion and try to wear their best fits pretty much every game. So guys like Dwayne Bacon, obviously, Terry Rozier, Miles Bridges, those guys pretty much have so much clothes. And it's definitely interesting because I'm pretty much into fashion, too. Not as much as I used to be, but I'm definitely excited to come to the next game with something new.
PJ Washington is my guest. He's working with Sport Blocks, which I'm going to get to in 1 minute. Also, PJ Washington, Inc. Hey, listen, very clearly you're thinking about basketball primarily. You're taking care of yourself, taking care of your game, and you're thinking about your business off of the floor. In fact, you've talked about in the future you would like to own a car dealership. Why is that a business you want to get into? Why do you want a dealership?
Growing up, my dad used to work in the car business, and he worked at CarMax. So he used to be able to drive different cars home at different nights. So I used to love that, and I used to love him driving big trucks and small cars and just all kind of stuff. So as a kid, that's something I wanted to do and something I wanted to get into.
I get that, man. I'm a car guy. I like that a lot. Now, I mentioned off the top, you and Sport Blocks have announced a really interesting partnership. I've known about this proposition, and I've always been interested in this. Lay it out for me. What exactly is Sport Blocks?
Sports Blocks is basically an online financial platform that allows people to invest in sports. So pretty much people can invest in my business, and I'll be making contributions back. So investors can receive basically up to 5% of their return and plus upsides from operations in a corporation when they invest.
Right, so lay that out for me. Like, do I get, am I buying a piece of your business? Am I investing in your contract, your off-the-floor earnings? Exactly what am I investing in? How does that work?
You're investing in my business. So I'll make contributions to the corporation that fund returns, basically to investors. And my operations for my business tend to marketing, wealth managing, and recruiting.
All right, so how did you first get interested in this idea, and how did the fans get involved?
So the idea came back before I got drafted, and we've been working on it this whole year, and we just finalized everything. So I'm very excited about it, and pretty much fans can get involved by going to sportsblx.com to find out more and invest.
Are there other players or other athletes in other sports? Are you the first? Like, who else can we invest in after we invest in you?
Well, I'm the first official player partner, but I mean, I definitely see athletes coming in the future. I don't see why not. I think it's a smart investment, and it's a great way to create wealth off the court.
Dude, I think it's fascinating. Like, if I buy shares, does that give me a direct line to you? Can I say, yo, man, are you getting your work in? Are we going to get some dividends here?
Yeah, no. I mean, I don't think that'll be possible, but I mean, I'll definitely.
I'm not worried about you, man. I know you're working. Fellas, if you're like me and every other person working remotely, you've been staring at your gray hairs and all of your colleagues' gray hairs on video calls for months now, and you've probably been thinking, man, I should do something about this. I really should. I should color my hair. Maybe you're thinking about it. Trust me, you're not alone. Now, last week, I heard about Madison Reed Mister, and what caught my attention here was the before and after shots of the beards. Madison Reed Mister is a gray blending, that's key now, gray blending natural color for your hair and your beard. As an example, what are we talking about when we talk about blend? We're talking about you not getting that shoe polish look, that nasty look. There's none of that here. Maybe you're not looking for a really drastic change. Maybe you only want a little more pepper and a little less salt. Whatever you're looking for, Madison Reed Mister makes it easy to find your color match right there on the website. They deliver it right to your door, and the process is quick and it's easy. You simply apply the color gel to dry hair. You apply the color activator. You wait 10 minutes. Then you rinse and shampoo. And the natural-looking hair color fades gradually, so there is no commitment. Just go to MadisonReedMister.com. That's MadisonReedMR.com. Use the code ROME. Get 10% off plus free shipping on your first box of Madison Reed Mister. It's a great deal. One more time. Codename Rome, Madison Reed Mister. The Bucks erased by the Heat last night. And because of how people are, the immediate topic has got nothing to do with the Miami Heat and how well they've played, how good they look, how tough they are, what they've done. No. Because of the way people are, it's all about Giannis and his future. Now, the easiest segment for me right now would be just to sit up here and say, if you're Giannis, what do? Do you sign that Supermax deal when it's offered to you, or do you wait until free agency next summer? Or, if I were really a hack, I'd just throw open the phone lines and ask for fans of other teams to start to make their pitch for Giannis. I would ask Warrior, Heat, Laker fans to call in and pretend to be GMs and make a presentation to the freak. Or I could go in a totally different direction. I could do the really stupid thing where the host challenges the toughness of the athlete by questioning why he didn't play last night. Never mind that he's dealing with a jacked up ankle. Never mind that it was the team that held him out. Never mind that this particular guy would probably saw off his leg if there was a chance that he could play in that game. You know there's probably some dope out there today questioning the toughness of Giannis. And it would be moronic and contrived and lazy and obvious and all wrong. In fact, why don't we just stay there for a minute and address the imbecility in that? The question of whether or not Giannis should have played or whether he wanted to play. First, he should not have played. Secondly, he clearly wanted to play. You'd think a guy who busts his ass the way he does, a guy who cares about his teammates the way he does, a guy who wants to win as badly as he does, is going to be in that spot and just tell everybody, nah, I think for the first time ever, I'll take the easy way out. I'll take the path of least resistance. And you know why that is? Because I finally figured out winning isn't easy. In fact, I'll tell you something else I figured out. Winning is overrated. And in fact, the ring is not the thing. The paycheck is. And I'm not going to jeopardize mine by doing anything right here. I'm not going to do a damn thing and jeopardize my paycheck. You feel me? You tell me you think that's what that guy thinks. Is that what you think this guy was thinking? Because if so, you've got him and you've got it all freaking wrong.
I kind of feel lost, to be honest with you. But, you know, if it's up to me, I'll play with one leg. I really don't care. But at the end of the day, you know, we have people in the team that sometimes they have bigger say than you, and they have to protect you. They have to protect your health no matter what. And, you know, it's good because, you know, there's a lot of cases in previous cases in the past that put, you know, the team over the player's health. And, you know, I love my organization for that. I appreciate that they protected me. But, you know, I wanted to play. Everybody, you know I wanted to play. I know I wanted to play. My coach know I wanted to play. But at the end of the day, my organization put my health over game five. And that's big for me.
Anybody who says that this guy did not want to play either does not know the guy or is just saying crap to say crap. Of course he wanted to play. But as always, the team oftentimes has to protect the player from himself or herself because any great athlete would want to play. Any proud athlete would want to play. Of course he wanted to play. So now that we've got that cleared up for any idiots, let's move on to the question of Giannis and his future and whether losing that series is also going to cost the Bucks a chance at keeping him. Now, I'm not walking around inside this guy's head, but I wish I were because I'm really curious what he is thinking. Like, how does he process that loss? I'm sure the first thing he'll do is look in the mirror and figure out where he came up short, where he needs to get better. Because as dominant as he is, there are still some holes in his game. He needs to own that, and he will. But the fact of the matter is, they did fail him again. Letting Malcolm Brogdon get away from them came back to bite them in the ass. They need to get Giannis more help. The question is, will they? And if they do, what kind of help? Better question, does Giannis think that they will get him help? Because he's all in. But if it feels like they're not, why stay? Because they can pay him more money? I mean, they can pay him more money. A lot more money. But he's made it very clear, winning is the most important thing. And frankly, they're not doing enough winning. Not right now, they're not. Frankly, they were not ready for the big stage. And getting bounced by Miami in the second round in five games, given their expectations this season, given how well they played before the shutdown, man, that's a disaster. That's a disastrous ending. So yes, I would love to know what the big fella is thinking right about now. Does he think that it's merely a process and that they are on the right track? Or does he think that he's going to have to leave to get what he really wants? Yes, he got hurt. Yes, COVID happened. But COVID happened to everybody else too. And the fact is, as dominant as they were before the shutdown, they never look right after it. So where do we go from here? Yes, the team can offer him that super max before the end of the year, a deal that would pay him way more than any other team would be allowed to pay him. But if he doesn't sign that supermax, he can become an unrestricted free agent after next season. So if you're Giannis, how do you go about that? How do you approach it? Does he hold the league hostage the entire offseason and make it all about him, the way others before him have? No names mentioned, Kevin Durant. It doesn't sound like that. Not if you see what he told Chris Haynes after the game. Quote, "It's not happening. That's not happening. Some see a wall and go in another direction. I plow through it. We just have to get better as a team, individually, and get right back at it next season." End quote. All right, so that sounds good, right? Now, he's not saying he'll lock in long term, but what I'm hearing is, I can't wait to get back in the fight. And I do like it here. And I'm not looking to leave. But it also says here, he'd be a dope not to look around and see if there's a better situation for him, which makes it incumbent upon the Bucks organization to convince him that there's not. Because you know Bob Myers or Pat Riley or that Rob Lowe lookalike here in LA and others are damn well going to try to convince him that they have better situations than what Milwaukee is offering. So the good news is, I don't think he's looking to leave. Not at all. The bad news is, they have not given him enough good reasons to stay. And just being able to pay him a hell of a lot more money than anybody else is not going to be enough of a good reason to get him to stay. They're going to have to do more. A lot more. And maybe they will. Maybe they can. But if his future there is getting bounced early every year in the playoffs, then his future ain't there. They're going to have to do more. They're going to have to do better. He's holding all the cards. And it's not enough to say, yeah, but we can give you 80 mil more. It might be for a lot of guys, not for that guy. Devon Kennard is my guest. Devon, great to have you back. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing, Jim?
Good, good. Now, you and I spoke in March, shortly after you signed with Arizona, so bring me up to date. I mean, God, March. March feels like so long ago. What's it like to be Wednesday on game week, knowing that this Sunday you're playing the 49ers in a big divisional game?
Man, you're right. It feels like a lifetime ago since we last spoke, but, man, I'm excited. You know, it's exciting times being able to season being here, playing first game, going to San Francisco divisional game. And, you know, I like where we're at and I like the preparation we're putting in, and it's going to be a great one on Sunday.
You know, the team posted a great video from last month where you were mic'd up for the first day in pads in 8 months. What did that feel like to be back in pads, hitting, making contact, and working out with intensity?
Man, it felt good, you know, to go that long without playing some ball. You know, usually you have OTAs and everything. So, you know, for things to be pushed back the way they were and to finally have that first day of pads and hit somebody for the first time, it felt good. But, you know, after a week or two of that, you're ready to hit some other colors. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to that.
Devon Kennard's joining us. You know, you tweeted something also the other day that just blew my mind. Did you really just finish up your 7th training camp? I mean, it feels like yesterday that you were at USC. Does it feel like time has flown by to you, or does this all feel kind of normal?
Man, times flew. I feel like every year in the NFL goes faster and faster. You get more comfortable. You know, you get in a routine, and the days just start to fly. So to think I'm in my 7th year and you know, been blessed enough to play for some great organizations and to start my whole career, it's been an awesome journey, and I'm excited to be playing for the Cardinals now and going into a big season.
Well, not only that, but you've come full circle in the sense that you get to come back home. Like when you signed, you talked about the excitement and the opportunity about coming back home. What has the reality been like? I mean, how good has it been to be a member of the Cardinals so far and to be back so close to where you grew up?
I think recently it's finally kind of actually hit me. Like we break camp and I just get to drive home to my house and you know, after practice get to go home and see some of my family and things like that. So it's definitely hit me, and it's a blessing, you know, being able to play in your own backyard. I grew up not even 15 minutes away from our practice facility. So, you know, it's been a pleasure just being able to be around and play for an organization that I watched for so long.
Devon Kennard joining us. Also, as we touched on, your dad, Derek, played for the Cardinals back in the day. Sunday, you'll be playing for the Cardinals in a regular season game for the first time. Like, what do you think that's going to feel like? It's going to be a road game, but do you think it'll feel different playing for your hometown team?
You know, I take some pride in it. You know, I feel like that's the case regardless playing in the NFL, but I feel a little more. You know, it's a team and organization, like you said, my dad played for. I grew up watching and going to games just being from here. So, you know, I take a lot of pride in being an Arizona Cardinal and wanting us to be successful and have a great year. So, you know, I'm highly invested in the success of this team and what we're going to be able to accomplish.
All right, so there's a lot of great energy, a great vibe, and a lot of talent on both sides of the ball. You're expected to partner with Chandler Jones on the other side. As you've worked with him so far and watched him, what sticks out to you the most in terms of what makes him so special as a player?
You know, his consistency, you know, his hand placement, you know, the way he gets off, the way he works his moves. He's very detailed in his work, and that's something I could appreciate and things I've tried to pick up just being his teammate. So it's been a pleasure, and I'm excited to see what he does.
You know, he was talking about your versatility as well. He was talking about the fact that you can switch sides and you can do multiple things. So when it comes to the games, how much are you expecting to be feeding off of each other?
That's definitely the plan. You know, allow him to do what he does, and we can both move around and be versatile within it. And, you know, put whatever we can do to put ourselves in a position to be successful and help our team win.
Devon Kennard is joining us. Now, a few days back, you did something really cool. Because of COVID, you're not able to physically visit kids at Phoenix Children's Hospital. So instead, you did some virtual visits via a robot that went from room to room. What was that like?
Man, it was cool. You know, this time of year, everywhere I've played, I've really dove into the community and tried to make an impact off the field. And with COVID right now, I haven't been able to do that as much. But, you know, I was given an opportunity, and they told me about the robots in the hospital. And I was able to spend some quality time with, you know, with a kid in the children's hospital and just talk to him about sports, life, and everything else. And it was a really cool experience. You know, I wish I could have been there in person, but I think that was the next best thing.
Now, one of the patients did ask you if you would break out a special celebration for a good play in week one or week two. Have you been working on anything in particular, or are you going to break something out if you do?
Man, he showed me what he wanted me to do. I've practiced it in the mirror a couple times, so I might have to break it out for him once I get my first set.
Got to. All right, so as some people know, away from the field, you've quietly been investing in real estate. The story goes, before your final year at USC, you had suffered your third significant injury, and you were essentially asking yourself, you know, what if this doesn't happen for me? What if the NFL is not an option? It can be a pretty scary moment. What was it like to ask yourself that question, and then what did you come up with as an answer?
It was very, very humbling. You know, when you go through injuries and you feel like your childhood dream is on the line, it's like, all right, you know, what do I want my life to look like? And one decision I made is I wanted to be successful with or without football, and I wanted the same quality of life that I've always dreamed of. And I obviously wanted that life through playing in the NFL, but I realized even if I didn't, I wanted that same life. So, you know, I needed to figure out what the other thing was going to be for me, or what else was I was passionate about. And, you know, by the grace of God, I started to learn and figure out and have great mentors and learned about real estate. And that's something I dove into immediately.
You know, I think you made a really good point too recently. You were having a conversation with Forbes.com and you said, quote, "No one is going to be as interested in me as they are right now, and that window has been pretty big for me," end quote. Like, I've seen this time and time again. It can be really easy to get caught up in the fame and the money and to think that it's never, ever going to end. So how were you able to take a step back and realize, you know, there is a good chance that when I retire, people may not be as interested in me?
I think it's very essential to kind of build those relationships now, because, you know, if I have a relationship with you that's built while I was playing, even when I'm done, you know, we'll be able to still have a relationship, and you kind of know me as a player, not me as a person, not just a player. But, you know, when you don't do that and you don't build relationships, you don't build a network, and you get done playing and you don't have that, and you try to start reaching out to people, you know, they're less interested at that point. So that's something, you know, having a father play in the NFL and kind of hearing things he's told me over the years, and then just what I've observed through you know, college and even in the pros of how different guys handle things. It's something that I picked up and was like, all right, you know, this is how I want to operate, and I want to, you know, build that network now so I have so many doors open and opportunities and relationships that I can lean on, you know, for the rest of my life.
I think that's so smart. And then finally, knowing that, having that perspective, how much does that influence how you approach your investments away from the field?
I think it's a huge part of it. You know, when you have a good network and you have people you can lean on who are experts and at the best of their respective field, now you get to lean on their expertise. And, you know, what are you doing? Is there opportunities for me to invest alongside you? Is there opportunities for me to learn from you or to, you know, for you to introduce me to some of the people that you know? So that's kind of where the advantage comes with that.
Good night now!